What? No, we're talking about Samson, you know, the famous strong man of the Bible, famed for his long locks. So I thought I would just see if this hair made me feel stronger. It doesn't. You know what this hair makes me feel? This hair makes me feel sorry for all of you who aren't blessed to be bald. Stuff's a hassle, and it's dirty. This is clean and aerodynamic. But Samson, as you might know his story, the end of it, he cuts off his hair, or Delilah seduces him to cut off his hair, and he loses his strength. But let's be clear. The strength wasn't in his hair. The strength was in the vow. It's kind of a Jewish thing. It's called a Nazarite vow, where for the time that you're taking the vow, you pledge not to cut your hair, not to drink alcohol, and not to touch dead bodies. Now, you know the end, he cuts his hair. But even last week when Ashley was speaking, you learned that Samson actually began to break the vow earlier by touching a dead body and probably by drinking alcohol during the vow. And so the issue with Samson was not that the strength was in his hair, the strength was in his faith in God, which he incrementally broke through his life. And so we want to ask a simple question. What makes a strong man weak? Now that's important for us at CTV because around here, if you've been here any time at all, you know that we honor strong men. Because we're sexist? No. We believe that strong women who we honor deserve a strong man as their partner, to come alongside them, to help raise the family, to help build a home, to help build a business. We want strong men. So this is a very important question for us. What makes a strong man weak? And I want to continue the story where Ashley left off last week, Judges chapter 14. Catch us up to kind of take a running start at this. Samson falls in love with a Philistine woman. Now, that's a problem because Philistines were the enemies of Israel. And so he's going into enemy territory, giving his strength over to a woman whose family is an enemy of his nation. They go to prepare for the engagement in a city called Timnah. And on the way, a lion attacks Samson. The lion never lived to regret it. Like Samson tore the lion apart with his bare hands. Oh, this is so manly. Well, fast forward, he's returning to Timnah for the wedding, and he goes by the carcass, and lo and behold, some bees have taken up residence in the carcass of the lion. And there's a hive, a honeycombs, the whole nine yards. And Samson is hungry, so he goes and grabs the honey. Now, you gotta know that the bees are not really happy about this. And they've got to be attacking and stinging Samson. Samson, like honey badger, don't care. He's just walking along, taking the honey, and goes to the wedding. His bride has arranged for him his groomsmen. Because remember, he's alone. These are enemies. So he's got 30 Philistine men that he doesn't know that are his groomsmen. Think wedding crashers. These guys are expensive to have on board. You think your wedding was expensive? Your wedding lasted one night. Their wedding lasted for 7 days. Full buffet, open bar. And Samson's doing the math going like, I got to recover some of my expenses. So here's his plot. He says, gentlemen, I'm going to give you a riddle. If you can solve the riddle within 7 days of the wedding, I will buy each of you a linen suit. Now, that doesn't make much sense in our culture, but think Armani. I'm going to give you an Armani suit if you solve my riddle. If you can't, every one of you needs to buy me an Armani suit. Deal? Deal. They're thinking there's 30 of them, 7 days. Surely it won't be that hard. After 3 days, they're not even close to the riddle. Here's the riddle. Because you know the backstory, I'm going to guess that you can guess it. Out of the eater, something to eat. Out of the strong, something sweet. On the fourth day, they're frustrated. because they realize, man, we can't afford to go buy Armani suits for this guy. So they begin to press Samson's new bride. On the fourth day, they said to Samson's wife, coax your husband into explaining the riddle for us. Coax, what's that mean? You know what the Hebrew word for coax means? You don't need to. You know how a woman coaxes a man. Or, they said, we will burn you and your father's household to death. Dude, that's some, like, gloves off hardball right there. And so she made her first and worst marriage mistake. She didn't trust her husband. Instead, she manipulates him. And it says in verse 16, Samson's wife threw herself on him, sobbing, you hate me, you don't really love me. Like the tears of a woman, that is kryptonite to a strong man. You've given my people a riddle, but you haven't told me the answer. And Samson said, but I haven't even told my parents the answer. Why would I tell you the answer? And she kept pressing him and pressing him until verse 17, she cried the whole 7 days of the feast. That's like the honeymoon from hell. So on the seventh day, he finally told her because she continued to press him. She in turn explained the riddle to her people, like threw him under the bus. So get this, the sun is beginning to set, seventh day, time is ticking. And Samson's 30 groomsmen come in and say, Samson, what is stronger than a lion and what is sweeter than honey? And he turns to his bride and says, honey, you threw me under the bus. Like you betrayed me. And he was furious. And Samson made his first and worst marriage mistake. He abandoned his bride right there at the altar. And he ran off to collect 30 Armani suits. Now, how did he do that? He attacked 30 rich noblemen of the Philistines, killed them, robbed them, and gave their garments to the 30 groomsmen, which they can now never wear in public, because as soon as they step out with this linen garment on, the widows say, oh, so you're responsible for killing my husband. It was kind of clever, but very cruel at the same time. You don't want to know what makes a strong man weak? Two things, more than anything else, two things. Uncontrolled anger and unbridled lust. And Samson is bitten by both pretty bad. His rage caused him to abandon his wife. And as his rage subsides, his lust grows. He's missing his bride. So he goes back to Timnah, chapter 15, verse 1. Later on, at the time of the wheat harvest, Samson took a young goat and went to visit his wife. He said, I'm going to my wife's room. And her father stopped Samson and said, yeah, you can't go into your wife's room. Samson goes, well, why? What's going on? Verse 2. I was so sure you hated her, he said, that I gave her to your companion. Hello. Like, if you're the father-in-law, how do you explain to this mighty man, like he is a beast of a man, he has just assassinated 30 of your kinsmen, and you have to explain to him, yeah, I kind of like, you know, gave your wife to your best man, who's not even your best man, he's another Philistine, sorry. Yeah, you're a dead man. So to try to recover, he says this. This, like, if you're not reading your Bible, you need to. Even if you're not a Christian, you need to read this stuff because you can't make this up. Isn't her younger sister more attractive? Take her instead. What? Like, her own father is reducing her to a piece of meat. Uncontrolled anger and unbridled lust are the two things that will destroy a strong man. And Samson just comes uncorked. This time, Samson said to them, this time, I have a right to get even with the Philistines. I will really harm them. Oh, like worse than killing 30 men. Actually, it is. So he went out and caught 300 foxes and tied them tail to tail in pairs, which I've got to guess is harder than it sounds. He takes a torch and ties it to each of these foxes who are disillusioned and quite hyperactive and upset at this point. And he lights a torch and releases the foxes into the Philistine fields. And it destroys all of their grain fields. That lights them all on fire. By destroying the grain, Samson impoverished the Philistines for a year. But the foxes didn't stop there. They went into the olive groves and they went into the vineyards, and that impoverished the Philistines for a decade. Now the Philistines want to retaliate. And you're going to notice a pattern in Samson that it keeps escalating. Uncontrolled anger always escalates until it is full-blown rage. And you're going to notice that unbridled lust always escalates until your lust winds up consuming you. The story goes on, and basically, it just gets worse and worse. Samson says, I swear that I won't stop until I get my revenge. The Philistines say, we're going to do to him as he did to us. Samson says again, I merely did to them what they did to me. Vengeance always escalates until it's totally out of control. By the end of this chapter, Samson, with the jawbone of a donkey, will kill 1,000 Philistine men. So let me ask you again, what makes a strong man weak? It is uncontrolled anger and unbridled lust. A few weeks ago in our previous series, Ashley talked about anger. And it's a message, frankly, I think you should have on speed dial. Because a lot of people deal with anger, and this is a message that is so insightful for why you're angry and what to do with it. So I'm not going to revisit that. I'm just going to push that off to the side. I want to talk specifically with you about unbridled lust. Because in my opinion, there are more strong men destroyed by the lust through pornography than anything else in our culture. Some of the strongest men that I know and that you know are totally trapped by this addiction to pornography. Pornography will rob you. Eventually, it will just leech out the strength of your sexual prowess. It will leech out the strength of the intimacy of your relationships. Pornography causes men to live in the shadows and have secrets from their wives, from their children, from their colleagues at work. It is a blight on our culture. And what's interesting is that the more common pornography becomes through cell phones and through internet pornography, the more common it becomes, the more acceptable it becomes. So the older generation generally views pornography as bad and negative. Do you realize that teenagers don't? You survey teenagers, only 32% of teenagers believe that pornography is wrong. Can you believe that? There is, while it's becoming more acceptable, there's also a movement among men, not Christian men, not moral men, but men who are realizing that their strength is being robbed through pornography. There's a movement of men to get out of the addiction to pornography. We've mentioned this before at our church, but we've never dealt with it as directly as we are going to right now. And we have invited in as a guest to CCV, one of the leading experts in the nation on pornography. He's a friend of mine. He will become a friend of yours. His name is Craig Gross, the founder of XXXChurch.com. He is known as the porn pastor of America. Would you help me welcome Craig Gross? Hey, man, welcome. Dude, it is so good to see you again. Craig and I go back probably nearly 20 years now. We did a series of youth conferences together, and I remember, Craig, you were in California, I was living in Missouri, and I heard, you know, that Craig Gross dude, he like got this URL, XXXChurch.com, and I thought, wow, who would have put that together? Right? And so now you are known, because you have dealt with pornography so much, you are known as America's porn pastor.
Yeah, my mom's proud. she's like, I paid all this money for college for you to be a real pastor. When is that going to happen? But I mean, what you're talking about was in 2001. So when I started this, everybody back then was like, I mean, there's other problems. Like, what are you doing? Now it's a little more common. I sit on a plane and people go, oh yeah, they tell me their story. But I mean, this was back in the AOL. Remember that annoying sound? You know, that sign on.
Yeah, it took 30 minutes for one image to come up. You got to really want to see porn to wait 30 minutes for.
It still, though, was there. I was doing youth ministry. That's how Mark and I knew each other. And it was one of those things where I'm 42. Mark's older.
Easy.
So, like, we grew up in a generation where you had to work really hard to find porn. So even 30 minutes waiting for an image was better than stealing it from a liquor store.
Yeah.
And now we're living in a day and age where you have to work really hard to avoid it. And
wow.
And so for us, yeah, doing this for 18 years, I didn't think I would still be doing this. This is just one of many ideas.
Yeah. But. So you've been talking about porn for 18 years, and this XXXchurch.com is a resource. How many pages did you say is on there?
I mean, there's like 14,000 pages of content. So if you have a question or some situation, there's a chance we probably talked about it.
Yeah.
You know, there's been 100 million visitors to our site. I mean, you put three X's in front of your website, you'll get more traffic. that's just you know, it works.
Yeah, so I want to, wow, I'll say it backwards, wow. I want to ask you three specific questions because we've got you here. This is XXXchurch.com is such a great resource for our people. I want to reduce it to three specific questions in the time that we have. And the first one is, why are men and women drawn to pornography?
Yeah, it's hard to put everybody obviously in the same box. So a couple reasons, and maybe you fit in one of these. I would say first is trauma. And a lot of guys are like, what? I mean, what does my past or pain have to do with this? Quite a bit.
Yeah, because I thought most guys just went to porn because they're dudes and they lust. But you're saying there's a deeper precipitating issue.
I mean, you just talked about Samson and the rage and then the lust. So a lot of times, like when you connect the dots, there's some deeper stuff going on. And porn, if you look at it as medicine or as medicating something, it's easy, it's quick, it's cheap, it's available,
Say that again. Porn is medication.
For a lot of people. I mean, it's not good medication, but for your brain, you know, the dopamine, the release of all that stuff. So I would say pain, there's oftentimes, you know, if it's depression, if it's anxiety, there's, hey, porn is a release and a relief for some people. Other people would just go, oh, it's mindless entertainment. Some people would say, hey, I go to it for actual sex tips, which, man, if that's you, porn, what you're watching on screen, should not be anything part of your sex education because it's far from anything that you're gonna actually do in a real sexual relationship. I would say some say they pursue porn as a way to stay faithful, which I know that doesn't make sense, but for some people are saying, hey, I'm on a business trip, and rather than having an affair or hooking up with somebody, I just go to porn. And then there's other people that would say, I go to porn because my partner, maybe I'm in a sexless relationship, or I'm trying to remain pure as a Christian, as a teenager, so I'll just look at porn instead of actually do these things. So those are what I would say are a lot of reasons.
Well, I've heard that a lot from teenagers who think, and I thought this way, you know, as a teenager, like I'm 15 years old, I'm determined to be celibate until I get married. But once I get married, I'll obviously not be interested anymore. How does that work?
It doesn't. I mean, this quote I've heard once from a friend, he said, the things you play with in high school will play with you as an adult. Wow. And I think that misconception especially is like, oh, I'm a virgin, you know, I made it. But it's like, we compare a lot, obviously, in our kind of Christian, yeah, I mean, I was brought up in a really religious home and in school where it was like, man, you don't want to do these things, but at what cost is that when you bring a 13-year addiction of pornography into your marriage? Like, oh, you're really pure? I mean, you're a virgin, but then yet you're bringing this in, and I think, man, this is setting you up for some dangerous...
We have a wide range of people in the audience right now, from 70s plus to teens down. What have you noticed, any difference in pornography addictions between older and younger, generational differences.
Yeah, I mean, you said it too, and 32% of kids don't even see a big deal. The quote that Barna said, actually, Barna does all this research, so these are facts. He says that actually teenagers surveyed under 18 find not recycling a bigger issue today than pornography.
Wow.
And so that's just, to me, it's like, hey, our generation, we're going, hey, I know I don't want to look at this. I know there's something wrong with this. So we're talking to kids who also, on their Instagram feed, have more exposure to things that aren't even considered pornography than we could see as kids. And so when you get into pornography, they're just like, what's the big deal? I mean, people give me a new job anytime I go to a college campus even. You know, I do these debates, the porn debate. And so many people are like, well, there's so many bigger things to deal with than this. Like, this is not a big deal.
Yeah, so let's,
it's scary.
Let's just ask the question, because I know from a Christian perspective, people expect to hear pornography is bad and you know, marriage, sex and marriage is good. So it's portrayed as an issue of right and wrong. But you're not saying it's just right and wrong. You're saying there's things that are healthy and good for human beings and pornography is actually hurtful. So here's my question. What do you, in your experience, what do you see pornography doing to men and also to women?
Yeah, I think this is if you could hear this one thing, because women and men see this totally differently. And that's why I think this is such a hard issue to bring up in even in your marriage. Because if this was an alcohol problem, nobody's jealous of the alcohol bottle, if that makes sense. But because this is another woman you're looking at on a screen, immediately for women, this gets very emotional. And it's actually in the stats that are out there, women pursue pornography now. About 30% of the people that look at porn online are women, but for a whole different reason than men. And sure, there's some women that are visually turned on by this, but a lot of women, it's more just an emotional connection. They're actually even more prone to look at pornography, cyber sex, these things, and actually meet the person because it's all about an emotional connection. And so for guys, it's a physical, it's strictly visual. And so I'll just, guys, if you've been with me on this one before, where you walk out maybe out of the shower and your wife's watching Fixer Upper, and then you're like, take the towel off and you're waving. My wife won't even look up from the screen. It's just like Fixer Upper is on. Now, I'm a Packer fan, headed to the game tomorrow. So we're watching the Packer game. It could be fourth quarter. And if my wife does that same thing, I'll hit pause. I'll get the clips on SportsCenter later.
Yeah, game over.
Because
game over.
There's something here. And so that idea of guys are just visually drawn to this. So guys are looking at pornography, and sometimes, it's dangerous when you bring those things and say, oh, I would like to do this in our relationship. But most of the times, this is a fantasy. And our world, whether we're selling cheeseburgers or clickbait stuff that we see online, it's drawing you in just for that hit. And I think that's the difference, where if we could see that the wiring of a male's brain is different than a woman. We did all this research with this project with Shanti Feldhahn, who's been at this church, and it's fascinating to understand that there's a difference there. And pornography does two different things to each of us.
So let me see if I'm understanding this right. Because this actually is, when couples leave here today and have this conversation, it's often very, very tense between a man and a woman to have this conversation. Because every time that I've dealt with a couple where she's caught him looking at pornography, she interprets that as adultery. Because for her, even pornography is about a connection, an emotional connection. And for a man, it is exactly not about. I mean, the reason that guys are looking at porn is because it doesn't cost emotionally. You have zero emotional investment in it. So what a woman interprets her man's behavior is opposite of what he's actually experiencing. Am I getting that even close?
Oh, so close. And that's why when we say, hey, if you grew up looking at porn, or if you pursue porn rather than your spouse, porn though is very selfish. And now we have porn for whatever niche market you want. You can find this exact thing that you want online. And even that is detrimental, because it takes no work. And so it's all about your needs. When you have a marriage relationship and sex is not just instant, you know, what is doing the dishes or, you know, all the things going into your day have a lot to do with maybe what happens that night. And porn doesn't require anything from you, so it's an easy escape. And your sex life is going to actually suffer. When we hear it all the time, married folks are going, hey, I'm pursuing pornography rather than pursuing that intimate relationship because that's hard work. And a lot of times that disconnect, man, that's too hard. So I'll just go over here and get my, you know, fix over here.
Yeah, so let me just clarify, you know, Craig is a guest here. If you've been around, you know this is true, what I'm about to say. CCV is a pro-sex church. We love it. We want you in a covenant marriage relationship. We want you to engage in sex a lot and to enjoy it a lot. Because I mean, this is God's design. I didn't make this stuff up. This is His design. When we talk about pornography, it's not just a moral issue. Oh, that's bad, and this is righteous. It's about here's what will build a healthy family, a healthy community, a healthy church. So that's really our heart in having this whole discussion. So I'm gonna shift gears and ask a third question.
I was just thinking about some domain names for this new church.
Yeah, okay, so, yeah.
All right, with that.
We'll tweet those out later. What are, for anyone struggling with this, a couple struggling with it, what would you say are the first steps to recovery?
The first thing, finding unconditional loving community that understands what it is that you're going through. Whether that's a small group, whether that's an accountability partner, whether that's a recovery group. I mean, there's even obviously secular groups around town. I mean, you got AA for alcohol, but there's groups like SA. There's some sort of sense of, hey, this group understands me. You have zero chance at doing this on your own. The reason why you're stuck and the reason why you're in your situation is because the availability and the isolation that this is all breeded in. And so if you're continuing that, like, oh, I'm strong, I'm going to actually get through this on my own, I know you're going to be stuck.
Well, let me clarify here, because we got a lot of strong men out here that are being made weak by pornography. And the impulse of a lot of, well, most strong men would say, you know, I can do it myself. I can muscle through this. I can handle this. I mean, Ashley talked last week about part of the problem of Samson was he said, I can handle this. Am I hearing you say that if any man out there says, it's a secret, I'm going to keep it a secret, I'm going to deal with it on my own, they have zero chance of successfully dealing with it?
Zero, and it's going to progress from whether it's online to offline to actually, oh man, now I want to experience these fantasies. I mean, this is going to head you in a direction, we call it Porn Boulevard, and at the end of Porn Boulevard, it's a dead end, but you know, when that navigation's trying to reroute you, and you're like, oh no, I got it, and that's what we do. We're like, oh no, I can do this on my own. Don't be so scared in a room like this. It's just like, once you can connect and you go, man, I know that person will understand me, it's a safe place. That is key, and it's scary, but and it is worth it.
Well, I gotta ask this then, because I'm looking out at, we've got people on all our campuses sitting together with a spouse. Some people are sweating right now because this is really uncomfortable for them, because he knows and he thinks she might know. Yeah. But if part of that revealing involves your spouse, her response is really critical to his success. So what would you say to wives or female partners that would, you know, love someone, care about, maybe they're engaged, or what would you say a woman can do that would be really helpful to a man actually speaking up?
Yeah, that's good, because so I just talked about finding that community, that safe place. So I think in a marriage relationship, man, you don't want or need, my friend said it this way, you don't want your wife as a jailer or like as your mom, or I've said before, like as a detective. And that's what happens, man. When we do this stuff in isolation and we keep secrets, man, we're looking for that stuff. But then it's just like, man, we're going to lie. We're going to hide. We're not going to admit to it. So this idea in your marriage, you've got your best friend, and you've got this idea of if this was anything but porn, I think there would be overwhelming support. Like I said, if it's drugs or alcohol or a number of these things.
Yeah, I mean, just to interrupt for just a second, he mentioned that earlier. I want to reiterate, if you caught your husband with an alcoholic problem, you would not take it personally because it's not about you. It's about his sickness and his hurt. Wives, you cannot take this personally. This is not about you. And when you make it about you, you make it way more difficult for him to speak up. You think this is hard for you to hear? It is 10 times harder for him to say.
Yeah.
So if he does speak up, that is a bravery that you have to respect and be helpful with. So I love that story you told about your wife.
Yeah, and so, I mean, I've been doing this for 18 years. So it's like my wife gets this, right? Like my wife understands this, but there's still, it's like we're human beings and this stuff is uncomfortable at times. And so this was about like probably four or five years ago. So still way into Triple X Church. We're at this donut store that we drove an hour for because I love it. And you don't feel good eating donuts. And so we just, you know, we're in our minivan and we still got crumbs on us. And so I'm at the stop sign and in front of me walks a girl in bright lime green spandex, not a lot of spandex, and then headphones and weights. And she's doing this right in, I didn't hit her, but she was like right in front of my car. And my wife says to me, "Oh, like you didn't see her." But it was just like, I did something wrong. I'm like, I almost hit her. So I did see her. But everybody saw her. I mean, who didn't? Like, she's bright lime green. And then it was just, I could tell, like, my wife, like, for her, that's drummed up some, hey, yeah, you don't feel like, you're eating donuts, and here's this. And it was awkward. And I was just like, no, I didn't see her. I'm not looking at her. I didn't stop and wave. I didn't take a photo. I mean, it was just like, but you feel like all the way on a defensive side. And so it was just kind of like, this is a hard one even for me to navigate this. So fast forward years later, we had worked on this project with Shanti Feldhahn, and the book was called Through a Man's Eyes. And my wife likes Shanti, and she reads all her books. She doesn't like all this porn books. So she's just like, she read this book that Shanti and I wrote for women to understand the visual nature of men. And we're sitting on the beach in South Carolina, and our kids are out there playing. And at the time, my daughter's not a teenager yet. My son's maybe 13. And my wife just nicely, casually, calmly said, "So the beach is a hard place for a guy to be at." And I joked and I was like, "Yeah, why do you think I bought Elise swimsuits for her teenage years like 5 years ago? Because by the time she's gonna be a teenager, like there's gonna be nothing left on swimsuits and she's not gonna be wearing that." But then my wife was talking to me as a mother and as a wife. You know, we have a son now who's 15, and it's just like, hey, I want to know what it's like inside your brain because I know this is not the same feelings I have when I'm at the beach. And so it has opened up just so many more conversations since then with me and my wife because it's just, man, we can talk like that and we can have that understanding without, hey, you saw that girl and this and that. And I think if you can provide that safe place and that, hey, I'm not gonna be a detective, but I'm gonna just sit kind of side by side with my spouse as friends and say, you know what, let's understand this and let's talk about it. And I think you're gonna get so much more openness from each other.
That is such an important term, a safe place. And we want this church to be a safe place that if you feel drawn to pornography, feel stuck in pornography, we want you to be strong men. Because strong women deserve strong men. And so here's our challenge today. It is super simple. A 90-day challenge for you to be porn-free for the next 90 days. Could we just all agree for 90 days? And some of you are going, well, why don't we just quit forever? Because it's bad, it's evil. Look, I get it, but that's not the way addictions really work. And some of you right now are not ready to admit that you have a problem. So let's just make this agreement, okay? For 90 days, all of us together, men, women, we're gonna be porn-free. And if, like Samson, you break your vow in the next 90 days, would you be willing to admit that this is something that is making you weaker? And would you begin accessing the tools that can help you overcome this? Look, there's hope and help for everyone. And we want to give you a very helpful and practical tool right now. If you're using our mobile app, you've already seen it on the front screen. It is called the porn or the addiction index to pornography. Now, it doesn't mean if you take it that you're addicted to porn. We're not saying that. What we're saying is there's 10 simple questions. It will take you less than 60 seconds to take this quiz. It will tell you how far along on this journey toward addiction you are. The deeper in you are, the more deliberate you'll have to be to become a strong man or a strong woman. You can access this simple assessment on our website, but honestly, the app is the easiest way. So would you take just like a minute to download the app and take the assessment? No one will know you take it. No one is going to, like, Ashley's not going to call you and say, hey, you didn't really do very well on that, did you? This is completely private. If it shows that you're in a danger zone, we have a resource right there called Clean. Now, I'm going to warn you right now, Clean is a subscription resource. You have to pay for it. We feel so strongly about this that we have already paid for it for everyone who's hearing my voice. All you have to do is sign up to this subscription and you will have full access to Clean, and there's hundreds of other biblical resources. You know, we're win, train, send. This is part of our train strategy. We care about your spiritual growth and strength. We want to make sure that strong men are in our church to lead strong women in our faith to change. Like, we can't do this without us being strong. There's hope and help for everyone. So would you please join me in this 90-day challenge to become clean? Holy Father, we care about our community. And because of that, we're not just going to talk about right and wrong, moral and evil. It's beyond that. This is healthy and unhealthy, and this is making strong men and strong women weaker in their families, in their relationships. It's causing us to hide. It's causing us to live in the shadows. Would you free us? Jesus, you are the light of the world. Would you shed light even on these deep recesses of our pain and of our addictions so that we can live as with the strength that you give us through your Holy Spirit? It's in the name of Jesus that we pray. Amen. Thanks for being here. Have a great week.